Luke 18. We're going to be talking here this evening about Jesus coming into Jericho. Luke 18, 35, he entered Jericho or is on the road to Jericho, and in 19:1 he enters Jericho, and that's where he encountered Zacchaeus. Here he encounters a blind man. We know from the other accounts that this is a blind man named Bartimaeus. So, what do you know about Matthew 13? And there's a reason I'm asking this. It's not just a crazy Ivan.
Throwing away things.
Matthew, okay, but that's at the end.
Yeah.
Most of Matthew 13 is parable after parable after parable after parable, parables of the kingdom. I want to draw your attention to two of those in verse 44, Matthew 13, 44. Jesus said, "The kingdom of heaven is like a treasure hidden in the field, which a man found and hid, and for joy over it, he goes and sells all that he has and buys that field." 45, again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant seeking fine goods. And upon finding one of great value, he went and sold all that he had and bought it. Now, what's the pair of the similarity in those two short parables?
Somebody saw something of
Value.
value in.
Yeah, they were willing to trade everything they had to get this thing of value. Now, what's the difference in the two?
He just showed up.
One was accidental, just
Accidental,
stumbled
one
over.
was
The other one
just.
was the result of searching. Okay. Now, I think that we'll see some similarity between Bartimaeus and Zacchaeus. Bartimaeus just happened to be there when Jesus came by, but Zacchaeus was wanting to see Jesus. He was looking for Jesus. And so that just struck me. And there you have an introduction to our two areas of study here tonight. But I want to go back and pick up 31 through 34 of chapter 18, where he took this 12 aside and said, we're going on up to Jerusalem, and all things which are written through the prophets about the Son of Man will be accomplished. And that made us think of what? Were there any messianic prophecies in the law and the prophets?
All sorts of them.
All manner of them. From some really specific, detailed to some oblique, but many, many, many. And so he says, they will be accomplished. Completed is the way I translated that. Those things will be brought to their completion. And so, more than just accomplished, reach their end. The idea of completion is to reach their end, reach their target, reach their goal. And so, that's going to happen when I come to Jerusalem. We should be expecting some spectacular things when Jesus arrives in Jerusalem. All right? He says, because verse 32, he will be delivered up to the Gentiles, by whom? Doesn't say, but you know by whom. Who delivered Jesus to the Gentiles?
The
Jewish
Jewish
leadership.
leadership.
Okay. He will be delivered to the Gentiles, mocked, mistreated. I translated that mistreated as abused and spit upon. And after they have scourged him, they will kill him. And the third day he will rise again. Now, please note this connection, that Jesus had all things written about me will be fulfilled when I get to Jerusalem. And then he itemized a few of them, being delivered to the Gentiles, being scourged and abused and spit upon and killed, and then raised again on the third day. It's These are the things that Jesus expected them to be able to see in the prophets. And by the way, we should expect that of ourselves. Quit doing that, too. Now, it says here that they understood none of these things. It's like a veil on their mind. And we talked about that last week, a veil. The reality was clouded by the expectation, what they presumed it would be, what they were looking forward to it being. And I just want to go on record again of saying that there's a lot of that, even today, of people presuming things and as a result missing what the text says, what it so very clearly says. Now, with that in mind, and we'll pick this up again when we get to chapter 24, we're going to pop over to 24. Here, the resurrected Jesus now is meeting with his disciples and explaining things. In verse 44, he said to them, and he took a piece of broiled fish, ate it in their sight, said, I'm a real human being. I've got a real body here. Now he said to them, these are my words which I spoke to you while I was still with you, that all things written about me in the law of Moses and the prophets and the Psalms must be fulfilled. See, we just read that here in verse 31 of chapter 18. He said, I told you that everything written in prophets and the Psalms and the Moses had to be fulfilled. And so he said, now back here in chapter 18, verse 34, says they understood none of these things. But here in chapter 24, at verse 45, then he opened their mind to understand the scriptures. So, now we see what you were talking about. And what a blessing that was to have their minds opened. Here's a couple other things that I didn't have for you last week. Maybe one of these will be a repeat. But in Isaiah 53, we read of the suffering of the servant, how he was buried with a rich man, or he was with a rich man in his death. So that's kind of a thing that Jesus really, as a human, had no control over. I mean, once he's dead, he's dead. Where they bury him is not up to him. In Zechariah 9, verse 9, behold, your king is coming to you riding on a donkey. And we know what the triumphal entry, that's exactly what Jesus did. In Zechariah 13, verse 1, this is impressive. It says, in that day, the day that Zechariah was talking about, there will be a fountain opened for the house of David and for Jerusalem for sin and for impurity. And so the idea of God dealing in that day with sin and a fountain that would be open. So many, 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 many things we could look at and say, these are all going to be fulfilled when Jesus comes to Jerusalem. But they didn't understand. Now, where was he? Do you know? We know from chapter 9, at verse 51, he set his face steadfastly to go to Jerusalem. But we know from chapter 13, verse 32 and 33, when someone was saying, be careful, don't go to Jerusalem because they're looking for you. He says, you tell that old fox that I'm going to do this and do this and do this. And on the third day, I will be there. So we're 3 days out in chapter 13. See, 3 days out from Jerusalem in chapter 13. So now here in chapter 17, chapter 17 at verse 11, it says, and it came about that he was on his way to Jerusalem, he was passing through Samaria and Galilee. So that's after chapter 13, which says he was 3 days out. Here in chapter 17, he's passing through Samaria and Galilee. So not going into Jerusalem, but coming close. I mean, he was in the city, and I forget the reference, but he was in the city of Lazarus, which is Bethany, which is on the outskirts of Jerusalem. But now he's approaching Jericho. Now, where is Jericho? That's where Joshua fought the battle. Where is Jericho?
It's on the other side of the Jordan.
It's on the
same side. It's just north of the Dead Sea.
It's just at the north end of the Dead Sea on the west side of the Jordan. But it's a city below sea level, isn't it? Because both the Sea of Galilee, which is below sea level, runs into the Jordan River down to the sea, the Dead Sea, which is also below sea level. So all that, the entire length of the Jordan River is below sea level. And so is Jericho. You're going to have to go up that rather, what do we say, about 1,500 foot ascent to the level where Jerusalem was from Jericho. Anyway, that's where he is. He's in the Jordan Valley, there, the Jordan River Valley. That's where Jericho is. And he's drawing near. A blind man was seated there. Let me go ahead and read. A certain blind man was sitting by the road begging. Now, we know, like I said, from, I think it's from Mark, that this blind man's name is Bartimaeus. Bar meaning son of, and Timaeus, his father. Now, hearing a multitude going by, he began to inquire, what's this noise? He heard a multitude passing, going on into Jericho. What's this? Well, who was he? I don't want his name again, but who was he?
What was the question?
Who was he that heard this noise of the multitude going by?
Bartimaeus.
I don't want to know his name. I want to know who he was.
This blind man?
He's a blind man sitting there begging. Now, what great opportunity. Here's this multitude coming. Who's that? Maybe I'll be able to get a shekel here and a penny here and a denarius there. I mean, hit the crowd up for some money. Who is that? And so they told him that Jesus of Nazareth was passing. I mean, he didn't know who it was, right? That's why he asked. But it's Jesus of Nazareth passing by. And he called out saying, Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me, or take pity on me. So tell me about that. This blind guy down here in Jericho, begging from the passersby just to get enough to eat for the day. And he heard that it was Jesus. Just take it from there. Any thoughts that come to your mind?
Well, how did he know that Jesus was the son of David?
Great question. How long has Jesus been doing what he's been doing?
Well, 3 years now.
3 years, okay. I wonder if this fellow has heard about him. What would be your, if someone said, do you think Bartimaeus knew who Jesus was?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a no-brainer, isn't it?
Yeah.
He did. Son of David. How did you know that? His reputation preceded him. Okay. Imagine you're Bartimaeus and you're stuck in Jericho begging for money. You can't just call an Uber to come pick you up and take you to Jerusalem or wherever Jesus might be, hoping perhaps against hope that someday this Jesus he's heard about will come his way. Well, there it is.
Opportunity.
It's a great opportunity. Okay. Michael, did you have a thought?
No, I was just saying the 3 years. I agree with that. Just but it's also strange that Jesus didn't go to him, but he went to Jesus. And they brought him to him. They brought him to the healer.
Okay. Well, we're not quite there yet, but yeah. So he wondered, what's going on? Verse 37, and they told him that Jesus of Nazareth was passing by. That clicked with him. He word of mouth. He knew that this fella had something that would be driven by mercy, be driven by pity. And clearly he had something he had in mind, as we'll see. And so he called out saying, Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me. Pity me. And the crowd, those who were leading the entourage, were sternly telling him, literally rebuking him, shut up. This is not sternly telling him to be quiet. This is rebuking him. You're out of line here. It's pretty stern. Sternly, yeah. It's pretty severe. Shut up. Why would anybody traveling with Jesus tell this guy to be quiet?
Well, maybe Jesus was teaching on the way.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
This is just a guess.
It's hard to get into the mindset of anybody there. So we saw in verse 34 that even his disciples, even the 12, didn't get it. And so to misunderstand what Jesus' mission was and how he does it. And I suppose, do you know what the term projection is in the psychological world?
Yeah.
And so I wouldn't have anything to do with that guy. So Jesus undoubtedly wouldn't either because, I'm with Jesus. And so there's something about the nature of the fella. You're blind.
His name may have something to do with it too.
Possibly. Though Luke doesn't go there. Okay. But you remember in John 9, the blind man? They came across a blind man, and the first thing his apostles asked him was,
whose fault?
Who sinned that this man would be born blind? That gives you an idea of how they would see a guy like that and say, that's God's judgment upon him. We don't want to, we don't want to have anything to do with you. This man that we're with is too holy to have anything to do with you, whatever, you see. But they clearly didn't share Jesus' perspective on this guy, did they? So they rebuked him, but, bless his soul, look what happened. They rebuked him, but he kept crying out all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." Now, in your mind, as you see this picture, this man, how do those words come out of his mouth?
What do you mean, that he called him Son of David?
No, the volume level.
Oh, it was obviously louder than the crowd.
He wanted to be heard, didn't he? And when they told him, they rebuked him and told him to shut up, he called out all the more. He raised his octave level. I am not going to be put off. I know who he is. I didn't plan to meet him today, but here he is. I want what he's got. And so they rebuked him, and he cried out all the more. Now, by the way, we didn't really talk about what did it mean when he called Jesus Son of David. What's implied by that?
Well, go to 2 Samuel 7.
Okay, 2 Samuel 7 is a promise God made to David to seat one of his offspring on his throne, to rule on his throne forever. And we go to, if we remember the story back in Luke, when the Gabriel and visited Mary, "I will give him the throne of his father David." All right, so this message is getting at the miracles that he's working, the teaching that he's doing. Some people are getting it, that this is the Son of David we've been waiting for. And he has the ability to have mercy on me. So Jesus, with his disciples rebuking this guy, and this guy not responding to his disciples, stopped. Okay, Michael, you got a hand. You got a question.
Yeah. Isn't the Son of David a messianic, I won't say nickname, but a terminology maybe that was assigned to the forthcoming Messiah? Like you say, the kingdom and everything, the kingdom, the scepter was not going to leave him. The blind man was able from all these 3 years and hearing of all the testimonies that were given to him that he could not see, that he knew the scriptures and that he was assigning that terminology to Jesus of Nazareth.
Yeah, don't know that he knew the scriptures. It's possible that he could have, I suspect most that he's heard the word of mouth and the repetition story and the I don't want to call them rumors, but you know what I'm saying. What people are saying about what people saw. Whether he knew the scriptures or not, I don't know. But calling him son of David is like what you're saying here, Michael, and like what Scott said from 2 Samuel 7, that of the offspring of David, God would sit one on his throne. That's what this phrase, son of David, would imply, that the one we've been looking for all these years.
We do the same thing we speak Christianese.
We do?
Yeah, we have our little phrases that we say that people from outside that are not Christians wouldn't have a clue.
Yeah, yeah. One of the ones that Greg nailed, a friend of ours, on, says, had a sign out in front of the church building: "Have you obeyed the gospel yet?" What does that mean?
Yeah,
that is a phrase in a certain
sense, even section of Christianity.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, and so yeah, we do that. But here they're rebuking, and the guy's crying out all the more. And I wonder what it was like when, verse 40, Jesus stopped. Literally, Jesus stood. So he's walking along, and he stood. Quit walking, so it's good here. But literally says Jesus stood there. So it's like this guy, okay, we're not going any further. We're going to deal with this. Jesus had an opportunity to teach his entourage what was important. See, this guy calling out for mercy. There's nothing, I don't think, Candy, I don't think there's anything more important in the ministry of Jesus than doling out mercy to those who wanted it. I wonder, and I want to pause here on this point because it's so important. His disciples rebuked the guy asking for mercy, and Jesus stopped because that guy's asking for mercy. So two things. How do we feel when we see somebody wanting help? Now, we might have, they're just taking advantage. We have to be, as Jesus said, wise as foxes and as harmless doves. We have to be wise. We have to be wise. But that wisdom can't be cynicism. I want to help people.
It's a fine line, isn't it?
It is. I want to help people. But what I want to do and what they want me to do, will that enable them to continue being what they are? Or will that be a step up to get out of where they are? It's a fine line. But to be open to the plea for mercy like Jesus was. I mean, after all, I am called to be a what? A disciple, which means what? Key thought in disciple is learner. I'm learning the ways of my master. Okay, so here's one thought that he derives out of this, and that is the thought of being merciful to people like he was, being open to being merciful to people, and not be like his entourages, rebuke the guy and let's keep on going. The second thing is, as I see how open Jesus is to a plea for mercy, and I know that I need mercy. Am I like this blind guy, willing to call out, "Son of David, be merciful to me. Have pity on me. I just botched it. I just blew it. I'm ugly with that person over there. And have mercy on me. Help me. Help me." And so two things. See, number one, be as open to the call for mercy as Jesus was. And number two, be as open to calling out for mercy as the blind man was. Okay? Pushing on from there, Jesus said, as he had him come to him, they brought him to him. And when he had come to him, Jesus said, "What do you want me to do for you?" And I pondered on that. And, you know, I pondered, I wondered about just giving everybody a scrap of paper that would be theirs to take home and show nobody. But to answer the question, what do you want Jesus to do for you? I mean, look at how Jesus, on carte blanche, just, what do you want me to do for you? It's just, have you been there? Just, have you thought, what do you want Jesus to do for you? You know, and I'm going to tell you, when I thought about that question, there was one name that popped up in my head. Said, if I could ask Jesus to do anything for me, I would ask him to bring Emmy back to him. I mean, that's, there's a lot of people, right? But that was the one that just jumped up in my heart. Can you bring her back? Can you bring her back? What do you want Jesus to do for you? Okay. And, you know, I've got sons that are kind of dribbling away from the faith, getting involved, just wrapped up in life. I would like for them to come back to him, be closer, get closer. Yeah, I got grandchildren. You know, there's a lot of things. What would you like Jesus to do for you? So just think about that. Jesus, Son of David, pity me. Let the emotions in the heart of Jesus cause him to act on your behalf. That, I guess that's where I'm going with that. It's more like a sermon than a class, right? So, Jesus said, what do you want? Verse 41. And they, he said, I want to recover my sight. Want, receive my sight, literally recover. Want to recover my sight. And Jesus said, recover your sight. That was a simple request. Now, to Jesus, a piece of cake.
Rod.
To that man, must have been life-changing. Yeah, Michael?
The word recover, I don't know how this is. I'm born blind from birth, but this sounds like that he used to have his sight beforehand and lost it and wants it back.
Well, maybe so. Maybe the word is just generalized, to recover sight, to get that which everybody has, but I didn't get. I don't want to press the technicality of
43 says you regained it though.
Okay. And so my New American Standard says received it. Mm. And but you says regained it.
This is NASB too.
Okay.
Yeah.
That must be the, mine's the 95. Yours must be the more recent.
Yeah.
Okay. So but yeah, it means to recover sight. But it doesn't imply, I guess I'm saying vernacular. In the vernacular, it doesn't imply that he ever saw before. It says that he got.
But that's irrelevant.
Yeah, it is really irrelevant. Glenn?
Gene just made a comment that I want to pass on to folks.
Okay.
Jesus already knew what he wanted. But he wanted the blind man to express it to him. In the same
that's
way,
such a great God, comment.
The same way that God wants us to request of him the things he already knows that we need.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's such a great comment. That is a great catch, Gene, that God knows everything we need, but he wants us to call out to him and for the mercy that he has to be activated by our call, not just for us to sit back and say, well, I know he knows what I need and help provide for me. There's a lot of comfort in that. But we see from this guy, what can I do for you? Jesus said. And immediately he did it. See, and immediately he regained his sight and was following him and glorifying God. And when all the people saw it, they gave praise to God too. Wow. We have. How do you want to typify Jesus? We have a miracle working God in our midst. I think sometimes that's the focal point, but I'd like you to take the focal point from the blind man's point of view. Point of view, is that? Does a blind man have a point of view? The blind man's question, have mercy on me. I want you to see that piece of your God, a God of mercy. Whether or not it's spectacular, miraculous, or just downright providential, that you have a God that has mercy on you. Any thoughts? And that when the people saw that, they were giving praise to God. And I'm just so filled with emotions right here that what an opportunity to plant the seed when the hearts are just praising God. Okay, great. Now let's show you how to walk with him and invite you to walk with him. All right. Any final thoughts on chapter 18? Because after being here on the outskirts of Jericho, we're going to go right on into it and meet a fella by the name of Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus, the Greek Zacchaeus. And so we say Eus. But that's fine. And he entered and was passing through Jericho. So he entered into the city. Now he's wandering through it, walking the streets of it. Behold, there was a man called by the name Zacchaeus, and he was a chief tax gatherer. Yeah, maybe a chief tax gatherer. I translated head. He was head tax collector in Jericho, and he was rich. Now, have we encountered a rich man previously?
Tax collector?
A rich man.
Yeah, young.
The rich young ruler, okay? Keep that in mind as we go through this story. And he was trying to see Jesus and see who Jesus was. I've heard about this. I want to see who he is. I want to catch a sight of this guy. How awesome must he look? He obviously hadn't met him before, but he wanted to see who he was. It doesn't say he wanted to see Jesus. He wanted to see who Jesus was. Okay. And who Jesus was. And so was seeking. Is it trying to see? Was seeking to see. Was seeking to see. And who Jesus was. But he was unable because of the crowd. Because he was small in stature. He was full grown but small is what the text says. Full grown but small. And so he ran on ahead. Notice verse 4. He ran on ahead. He didn't just walk or amble. There was some urgency. Some urgency and some thought given to, how am I going to make this happen? Now, you've seen this on parade routes where there's a parade going through. People will start climbing the lamp poles. Or if they can, they'll get into an apartment building and get up on the second floor and look out the window because they have a vantage point and they can see better. So he found a sycamore tree and decided he would climb up into it in order to see him because Jesus was about to pass that way. All he wanted to do was see this guy. Maybe he'd heard the story that just happened about the blind beggar because everybody's praising. Well, I want to see that guy. And so he's up in the, but there's something more about Zacchaeus that we don't know yet, but we will see it. And so when Jesus came to the place, so he's up in the tree, a full grown man up in a tree because I want to see Jesus. Ah, man, I just can't get up. It's too early. I don't want to go to church. And this full grown man decided, I'm going to climb a tree so I can see him. And so it's an attitude check. That's what I'm trying to say right here. There's an attitude check going on. So he was up in the tree. Jesus came that way. And when Jesus came to the place, he looked up and he said to him, Zacchaeus, hurry, come on down, for today I must stay at your house. I was impressed at that word must. It's mandatory. Yeah, it's a binding. It's obligatory. It's binding that I stay at your house. This, the root of this word is also used for slave, a bond servant, strong word. Jesus said, I've got to do that. It's bound on me to stay at your house. It's more than necessary It's obligatory. I must stay at your house. So Zacchaeus hurried and came down and received him gladly. Does yours say gladly?
In the margin, it says rejoicing.
And that's what the Greek word is. Received him rejoicing. Wow. He rejoiced over the fact that Jesus felt that he had to stay with this guy. I wonder how that, just try to picture Zacchaeus' role in society. What was his position in society? Michael.
He was an outcast, just like Matthew was. But the whole thing is, like you say, his stature. He was probably an outcast of the city and those around the other Jews and stuff. But as we see in that culture, a man of distinction and to have an entourage of people gathered around him and just trying to walk with the king, actually. And for him to pull him out, not even know him, never seen him before, and yet he knows him by name and requests to eat at his house. A very interesting paradigm.
Yeah, I would use a stronger word than request to eat his house. He says, I must. It was almost a demand, wasn't it? Yeah, Scott?
Is Zacchaeus, is that a Greek name?
It's hard to say. I mean, it sounds...
Because Matthew took a Greek name. Zacchaeus took a Greek name. And Bartimaeus is a Greek name.
I really haven't looked into that, so I can't comment on it. But what's your point?
These are all outcasts.
Yeah.
That's why they were so mean to Bartimaeus.
The main thing that we know here about Zacchaeus.
He hasn't seen much kindness.
He wasn't just a tax collector. He was the head tax collector, which made him persona non grata. Can I say it that way? He was not well received by the general public, as we will see in a minute. And so for Jesus to stop and say, I have to stay with you tonight. He didn't just say, I have to go in and eat dinner. I have to stay with you. I'm going to spend the night at this guy's house. And so hurry and come on down because I must stay at your house. And he hurried and came down and received him rejoicing. Mm-hmm. And when they saw it, mm-hmm. they all began to grumble. I mean, there was a grumbling. The Greek word is very, very descriptive. It was a throughout grumble. Mm-hmm. A throughout grumble. The word all is not there. It's just you picture the crowd, and throughout the crowd, there was a grumble going on.
This is the same as Jesus saying with a Roman.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Maybe even worse.
Maybe worse. Turncoat.
Yeah, turncoat. Yeah. And so maybe they would be willing to have a meal with this guy. In some neutral place, but to spend the night. And so there was this instant grumble. And just picture it in your mind. All of a sudden, Jesus said one thing and the whole mass started, what's he doing? He can't do that. Imagine staying with a guy like that. Can you believe it? And it says, back and forth with each other, it is like an instant boiling up of water in my head. And so, and when they saw it, they all began to grumble, saying, he's gone to be the guest of a man who is a sinner. He's going in to stay with a sinner man. And we can't imagine a sinner man. And what was the evidence that he was a sinner? Distinct from the fact that all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. What was their evidence that he was a sinner?
He was collecting.
He was collecting money from God's people to give it to the heathens. I mean, just put it as pejoratively as you can. Okay, so that's what this guy is doing, and that guy is going to stay with him. And they're hailing him as the son of David, and he's going to stay with that. So in both situations, we've seen Jesus' people rebuke the guy that wants mercy, and hear the spiritual leaders grumbling at Jesus showing some kind of kindness, some kind of receptivity to this turncoat. Michael?
Mary was asking me about Zacchaeus being in the tax gathering, like you say, an outcast. He would not be an individual that was considered unclean. It was more or less like you say, an outcast. But then she was asking about being unclean.
I don't know about unclean, but
I didn't have the right word for it. What I'm meaning is, was it tradition or was it law that you couldn't have a meal with certain people?
I think it's more custom.
Okay.
More the politically correct thing. Woke. I mean, the ancient application of wokeism. We can't have anything to do with that guy. Can't have anything to do with that guy. Not that they were unclean. It's just that they looked down their nose at him. Because here, this guy, obviously, he's blind. Obviously, he's condemned by God. Otherwise, he wouldn't. Who sinned? Is him or his parents that he'd be born blind? That was their mindset. And then this guy, Zacchaeus, who was he?
Tax
collector. He was somebody. You know, if you go back to Moses, and what would happen to somebody that didn't accept the prophet as God's spokesman? Deuteronomy 18. He'd be cut off from his people. All right. What has Zacchaeus done to himself? He's cut himself off from his people by going in and serving the Romans this way. He was seen as one who had disenfranchised himself. And Jesus is going to hang with that guy? And so you can see the attitudes at work that were contrary to the attitudes of Jesus. Go ahead.
So even worse, and Zacchaeus outs himself, if I've done these things. So not only was he collecting taxes, he was collecting more than the taxes that the Romans were charging.
Well, at least he's covering his bases.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's get to that point. And
I think they knew it too.
So Zacchaeus, verse 8, stopped and said, he stood there. He stood. He came up to Jesus and he stood there and said to the Lord, "Behold, Lord, half of my possessions I will give to the poor. And if I have defrauded anyone of anything, I'll give back four times as much." Now, I want you to think about that. First of all, he says, I'm going to give half of what I have. I'm a rich man. I'll give half of what I have. How many of us give half of anything to God? But yeah, he had a surplus, and so he could afford to do that. But the fact, why would he say that? I'll give half of what I have to God. What's driving that? What did he call him?
Lord.
Where did that come from? What does that mean?
My
master,
my ruler. It's not the same, but it is the same as saying son of David, my king, my Lord. So he's acknowledging who Jesus is. Has Jesus done anything for Zacchaeus at this point? Maybe he heard about Bartimaeus. Maybe he's heard about the miracles that were out there. He's heard. We have no evidence that he's seen anything, but he's heard. And he's heard enough to say, "You're the Lord," and called him Lord. I believe that this generosity is driven by, I suppose there's a lot of things it could be driven by. Maybe, maybe a sense of community. Obligation? That's not the word I'm looking for, but get the idea. I want to give back to my community, community involvement. Maybe it's driven by that. Maybe, as he says, and if I've defrauded anybody, not he's not admitting that he has, but he's also saying it may be that I have done it improperly, which is probably getting to the fact that he knows that maybe he's crossed the line a little bit. Except, what did John the Baptist say when they came up to him? Don't take more than you're commanded to take. Okay, and so maybe he's been padding his inherit his wealth by using his authority a little bit advantageously to himself. Maybe not. Okay, but I'm going to give half of everything I have, and I'll pay back four times as much to anybody I've defrauded. Now, where did he get that four times as much?
From the half that he has left.
Well, no, that's the number or the quantity. Where did he get? Is he just I'll
Pulling it out of the
quadruple it?
air.
Pardon me?
Pulling it out of the
Is he
air.
pulling it out of there? Or is he pulling it from Moses? If you look at, for example, Exodus 22, verse 1.
You mean, oh, that number four.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you look at Exodus 22, 1, if somebody has stolen a
Stolen.
sheep or a lamb or a goat, if it's a goat, you give them back five goats for the one you took. If it's a lamb, you give them back four lambs for the one you took. So clearly, Zacchaeus knows about the law. He's not somebody that's out there as a renegade and completely abandoned Judaism like they thought. He's a turncoat. He knows the law. He knows the law. And he's calling Jesus Lord. And so it gives us a sense of his willingness to commit to Jesus. What did Jesus say? Do you remember back in chapter 6, verse 46? Why do you
Call
call
me
me
Lord, Lord.
Lord, Lord, and don't do what I say? So Jesus is very clear that emptily calling me Lord is valueless. There's no profit in it. But this man says he calls him Lord and makes this very generous commitment. I will give back. I will give 50% of everything I have to the poor. Do you remember what Jesus told to the rich young ruler?
I was just going to bring him up.
Go ahead.
I have one more thing.
One more thing.
Yeah, he just
Columbo.
said, go and give away all you have to the
Yeah.
poor.
Yeah, that's what Jesus said to the rich young ruler.
Come
One, he said, one thing you lack. Now, what he lacked was not money. What he lacked was focus. He was focused on the money and what it could do, perhaps through him as a part of Jesus' kingdom. But what he wasn't focused on was Jesus as king. He was depending upon his money and what it could get him rather than on God. Give this to the poor and come follow me, you'll have treasures in heaven. All right. So the rich young ruler was unwilling to give anything away. Why didn't Jesus ask Zacchaeus, so you're going to give away half of one? Give it all away. Why didn't he ask him? Tell him the same thing.
Because he didn't have to.
That wasn't what he lacked, was it?
He didn't have
I'm
to. He
willing
was
to give
giving it
this.
away.
I want to be with you. I'm willing to give this away. And so he didn't say, give it all away. So I can assume from that the reason he told the rich young ruler to give it all away is because that's what he was holding on to.
Well, he says, I'm going to give half to the poor, and I'm going to give four times. So that's going to come out of the other half
Yeah,
that he has.
yeah.
So, and if you give him four times what he's taken, he's not going to have a lot left, and he knew it.
Yeah, he knew it. And he didn't want that. He wanted relationship with Jesus. Linda?
Yeah, you may have mentioned this. I think I left for a while. Giving back four times, is that his way of admitting that he sinned or that he stole?
That I think he understands that what the law required was that. And he was willing to do whatever was necessary.
If you stole from somebody, you were required to.
And I don't know that he's admitting that he stole, but I think he's admitting the possibility that others would have a claim against him. So I'll pay that back in quadruple.
He could have made a mistake.
Could have made a mistake. Yeah. Yeah, Michael.
I look at it consistent with his heart. He says, and if I have defrauded, I kind of read it as if his intent was to be as honest as he could to his fellow Jews. And I mean, he could have been a very good guy, knowing that if he didn't do the job, somebody else would do the job, and they would do it in a very harsh way and do it unjustly. And so, I mean, that's just, to me, looks consistent with his heart to follow the Lord, to give half of his possessions. And if.
Yeah, no, I agree. I totally agree. Totally agree. Okay. So what was Jesus' response? Verse 9. Jesus said to him, today salvation has come to this house because he too is a son of Abraham. Now, it's interesting that the word come is not the typical word come. It's the word to come about, like begettle, to become. Today, salvation has become to this house. I don't like dealing with technicalities because they can become confusing, but it's like it was generated, begotten.
It's an action.
Yeah, it was begotten. The gestation took place. The seed was planted in the heart, and it grew, and salvation has become. See? And so that's the picture I get from the particular Greek word that was used in that case. Come is the Greek word erkomai, to come. And this is the word, I will find it here.
Boom,
boom. It is the word agenato, to become. And so you see the word generate, agena, generate.
Being generated.
Yeah, begotten. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so that's where I get the idea. The seed was planted and it grew. It was begotten in him. And it came into existence. Today, salvation has come into existence in this house because he too is a son of Abraham. So that tells us that he was a Jew. Okay. Even though he has his Zacchaeus, he was a Jew. He was a son of Abraham. And so look what Jesus said. The Son of Man has come to seek and save that which was lost. Now, the word lost, you have a marginal reading on that. The word is destroyed.
Destroyed.
What's in the book Revelation, the master of the beast is called Apollyon. Apollyon, that's this word, Apollyon, and so destroyed, ruined. Have you ever heard of broken lives? That which was broken, destroyed. And loss is okay, but it doesn't carry the same impact of destruction that this word does. Everybody there knew that this man was going different than the society was going.
He did this to himself.
Yeah, he did. He made choices.
Destroyed
and probably was seeing the impact of those choices in where his life, because he was eager to find out who Jesus was. Why was he eager to find out who Jesus was? Perhaps an emptiness that hearing what he was doing was resonating with. I want to see this. I don't just want to see him. I want to see who he is. And there was this desire for more than what riches could give him. And it wasn't just the ostracized, being ostracized by society. He'd been living with that. He was rich there. It was an emptiness, a brokenness. And Jesus said, that's why I'm here. I am here for the broken. Now, the reality is, as Paul said, all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. The gospel is for every broken person. Jesus is for every broken person. I am for every broken person. Now, not every broken person wants what Jesus has. The rich young ruler didn't want it. Jesus let him walk away. But Jesus was there for him if he wanted it. So I'm thinking about me. What am I here for? Who am I here for? Who am I to pass, have a litmus test on who's acceptable? Who am I to say, I'm not going to talk to that person because he's blind, or that person is wearing the same clothes for the last 2 weeks. He smells bad. Who am I to say that person, Jesus doesn't want him? Jesus wants him. Now, he may not want Jesus. That's his choice, but I don't get to make it for him. And there's one thing that I missed on the blind man. I want to go back and pick this up. Jesus said in verse 42, receive your sight. Your faith has made you well. What faith did Jesus see? How did Jesus see this man's faith?
Only how he talked.
What do you mean by that? Tell me.
How he spoke to people.
Effort.
How he would not let the clamor of the crowd keep him from going to where he wanted. I won't be shut down. Why won't you be shut down? Because that man can do what I need. Now that's faith. I'm going for what Jesus has. I don't care what the crowd around me thinks. I'm going to ask him for mercy. And it's just, Jesus saw that as faith. You believe that I can do this for you to the point where you won't let anybody stop you. It reminds me of a young man I knew back in when I was in Indiana. He was in Illinois, and young man. His uncle was a preacher back here in Washington. He was there. And so he kept telling his mom, I want to be baptized. And they kept talking him out of it until they couldn't. And then he was baptized. But as long as they could talk him out of it, but he wasn't pushing for it. But he says, no, I'm going to do this. I've got to do this. And couldn't be talked out of it. They knew that he was not just following the crowd, just doing the faddish thing, not responding to the pressure of the preacher, but doing what he knew he wanted to do. They couldn't talk. They saw his faith. You see what I'm saying? And so that has stuck with me all these years. Any final thoughts? All right. Well, Scott's in the room with us tonight. He had I don't know if you call it surgery.
Procedure.
A procedure to relieve the dupertractor in his finger, and he is in a considerable discomfort. But he's here. You know, he bailed yesterday. He left my grandson, who had been with
him. Was there part of the time.
You were there part of the time.
But it started hurting.
But he left my grandson, who'd only done it one time before, to mind the food bank by himself. Of course, Jim was inside watching on camera to make sure he did it okay. But